This is March 1st, 2009, session number 12. We have Bob Carr, who's in Mumbai, India, on the Skype line here, and we're sort of doing a PS, and a afterthought. What do you call that? An epilogue? Epilogue,
I guess.
I was just going to say, you've just been traveling Cambodia and Thailand for 2 months, and you thought you had some new things, new perspective on our interview or about yourself.
Well, I was just sort of wanting to get out of their environment, you know, and out of their habits and that they have. And you see things or reflect on things. And for some reason or another, I always seem to want to philosophize things. Just some quirk I have in my nature. But, you know, I was thinking earlier, one time there was someone asked Jay Krishnamurti, they asked him, you know, what kind of people come to you and listen to your talks and so forth, and do you have any hopes that anybody's getting it, you know? And his answer was kind of based on the Indian idea that there are of the three gunas, there are three levels of action in the universe, and the lowest level, and the middle level, and the sattvic, which is the higher level, which is the spiritual level, and so forth. So, majority of the people are interested in baseball, cricket, you know, football, sex, money, working. You know, not at all interested in what makes them tick, what's going on inside of them, and is there a possibility of any understanding of their life, of their lives. Then there's a middle group that play around with it a little bit. They're a little bit interested. They read books, they attend lectures. You know, in moments of crisis or stress, they think about these things as they think about, is there an antidote to my dilemma, my problems, my, you know, they only think about it when there's a crisis, like they're breaking up with their wife or husband, or someone dies, or some stress creates this inquiry: what's going on? Why this happened to me, and so forth. And then Krishnamurti said there's a little group of people that he called serious, and he said they're more tuned in to what I'm saying, what's happening, and they have a possibility of understanding what understanding is, what the state of understanding is. And the state of understanding, as I see it, is facing the reality of what is, of what actually is taking place in one's life. It isn't a description of, oh, now I understand, you say. I see it because I have a description of my problem. It's seeing the problem as a fact, as a reality. Then there's no action to change it, or to run away from it, or to sanitize it, or this or that. And that seems to me to be that I'm interested in, is being able to on the of and not of creating a framework, a description, an antidote, making a hope, a bridge to another level or another idea. Because as I see it, there just isn't any change possible in the human psyche. It is what it is. It's been programmed. The culture has created it. The culture is a byproduct of living, of the millions of years that human beings have existed, and culture was derived from the human experience of surviving, and all the ideas, the fantasies, the illusions that mankind is capable of creating. So one has to look into their culture, which is their background. It's the religious idea. What I feel was responsible for the miseries that we have in life is that we are trying to live not according to how we actually feel and what is actually there with inside of us, but according to how we should live, according to what others have created as goals for us to achieve. Rules, regulations, ethics, morals, and the right way, the wrong way, this way, you know, follow me, all that sort of thing. Is the culture is constantly creating a dichotomy in our lives.
Hey, Robert, can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
I think that was more true when you were born and you were a child, and to some degree when I was a child. But it appears to me, when I go out on the street, you know, physically into the world, the culture has disappeared. It's been hijacked and co-opted by the electronic media. It exists. And in the electronic media, all cultures are swirling around together in the same space. And I think this is the dilemma that children being born today or brought up today, or 10 or 12-year-olds today, don't have the kind of culture that you did as a child, or even that I did as a child. They're bombarded with the fact that culture has been compressed into the electronic media and spread out all over the place, and there's no way to even get an orientation on what culture is anymore.
But you see, the electronic media is just another format of the culture. It's another way of...
I think you got knocked out. Are you there? Yeah. Scott there?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were saying...
Isn't that right, Bob?
You got blipped out. We didn't hear what you said. You were saying television is another kind of culture, same as the old culture? Well, is that what you were saying?
I was saying that television is an extension of the culture. It's another form of the culture, not another way the culture operates. Am I right?
Sort of, not really. You did it again, Robert. You brought in Rai and didn't even know it.
It's just I don't use that term, that's all.
Sorry. Right. But here's how I understand Rai. Rai was the first hypnosis, the first awe, the first good impression that made the average person be impressed with some individual. So it began with speech and how someone could communicate that, or maybe the way they mix their herbs and heal people. And then the next hypnotism is writing, and then after that is industry, all continuing to be hypnotism. And if culture is considered to be a kind of hypnotism and conditioning, then yes, television is a later stage. But mm-hmm. the criticism of the culture, represented by people like Yuji at Krishnamurti, what they criticize, which is usually belief systems based on writing and speech, that yeah. would not communicate to the young kids. So the kids are conditioned differently, and to wake them up would require a completely different approach to them. If you were going to be a UG or a guru, you wouldn't use the traditional guru priesthood kind of stuff. So yes, it's a conditioning.
You have to use the language that they're using.
Not the language. You got not the language, not the verbal language. You got to use environments.
By language, I meant okay. You have to use how they operate, their operating system.
Right, and so yes, all culture is hypnosis and conditioning, and television is extension of conditioning. But the way to prompt them to see, to shock them, into an awareness of something like Yuji used to do, into something more, is really difficult today because no one can shock these kids because everything is so great, at least if they're in the West and they've got their iPhones and all the media they have. Why would they want to leave it? They're almost like not suffering. And if they were suffering, they've got lots of distraction from it. So
no, they're totally distracted. That's, I mean, louder is the music to drown out, you know, their awareness of that they have a problem, you know.
That's right. I often think of Blavatsky apparently said that in 100 years, which would be our time, the kids would be subhuman. They'd be a sub race. For older people, that's what they look like. They're just total zombies in distraction.
Yeah.
So how are we going to... go ahead.
Well, how are you going to wake them up, you're saying?
Yeah, or even give them an inkling of something different. Like, it would be very interesting to have a character
okay,
like you.
Okay, here's the problem, as I see it. That... What is it you're trying to convey to them? What is this, you know, wake them up? What is, wake up to what? I'm asking.
Well, I agree, but you were saying culture is conditioning, but you might then say it's not a problem that culture is conditioning.
No, it's not a problem.
Right. It's not a problem for you. You accept the conditioning. You accept what is.
Well, let's put it this way. The culture is full of what we call opposites. This and that, that here, right and wrong, black and white, you know, blue and red and so forth, good and evil, night and day. Here's an example. Some kids are lost in their music and their ideas and their fun and their experience and their enthusiasm for living and the energy that they have. And someone comes along and says, "Hey, you're not functioning on the top level." Okay, that's the beginning of the problem right there. That what is the top level? That's also a byproduct of our culture. The idea that there's some place better to be than where I am right now. This is the problem I see in Krishnamurti. Jay Krishnamurti I'm talking about. He points out that there is suffering. There is brutality. There is pain. There is misery. There is inadequacy. People have been hypnotized and they're asleep, and they go on expressing this level of humankind, which is at war with itself, which is struggling and so forth. And so immediately you want to say, is there an alternative to this? Is there a way out of this mess that we're in? And this idea, is there a way out, is also part of our conditioning, right?
I agree with that. That is the issue. Now, you say you're a philosopher. Yeah. If a philosopher is a critic or someone who prompts thinking, you're presenting your role as a philosopher not to offer anything better, but to actually criticize those that offer something better or think they're offering something better, like Krishnamurti, and even Yuji, if you get to a certain angle on him. I recognize, but you're critiquing. Why don't you just accept the condition? I think
the
you
conditioning
even do
in the world.
Yeah, the illusion, because there is no way to judge who's smarter or more evolved than someone else.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the only
I
world
agree.
That I know, the only world or reality I know is my reality.
And you know, the Evergreens, when I talk to them about Krishnamurti, actually talked to Krishnamurti through the Evergreens, but one point the Evergreens said Krishnamurti made the mistake of thinking there was a higher level of consciousness.
Yeah.
That's what's unique about the Evergreens. They would agree with us. Mm-hmm. Here's a spirit coming through, or this group from the astral plane, and they offered no traditional higher consciousness goals or bait that the regular Ramthas and all the other gurus and channelers offer. They said, no, I don't know. They were trying to wake you up, but they didn't fall for the game of thinking that and projecting that something was better. That was pretty smart. That was pretty smart. Yeah. And I like that. But it's
okay. So Bob. So where does that leave us then? If we come to the point where we see that the gurus are just offering a diversion, just empty promises, and offering hope without delivering any goods at all. There is no goods to deliver. When one wakes up and finds out, by Jove, there is nothing to achieve. There isn't any exalted state. There isn't any union with the divine. There isn't any God. There isn't any... the whole spiritual quest is bunk. Bunkum. Bunkum. Fraud. Empty. It's a diversion, an illusion created by somebody trying to change what they think they are.
Now you're asking me what are we left with? I call it it's kind of like being an actor. That it's like moods. Humans get into a mood naturally through their thinking that there's something better, and you'll think it like from between noon and three. Okay, it's natural cycle. You start thinking something better, and you get into that mood, and you read a book, or you start thinking, or you phone in a talk show and demand that everybody gets smarter. And then by the evening, you drop that thought and you accept the bland, and you actually like it. The shifting through the moods of the day is what I accept, and so I realize I'm an actor, and so I will part of the day be a guru, be a Rai, offering a better awareness, and later in the day, if you're actually around me, I cancel that and then say, forget that I said that. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And that allows me to play. I act all the archetypes of mental postures in my life, in my public communication, and I don't identify with any of them. That's the only strategy. And because we have this new world of communication, like we're doing today, no one's communicated as much as humans do today. It's pretty awesome. So I enjoy it, but you have to pretend you're interested in the topic for a while. And it gets tricky when, like, between you and me, it's tricky because we come to the same agreement before we start talking. So we don't even need to talk to each other, but we will talk with each other just to see what little stimulation and moods we can create.
We can bring out of each other certain things, certain responses.
Let me say this. I think that this time, the way we've got to this point in this conversation, we never got to this point before. Where I could tell you what we'd already talked about how there was sort of nothing to talk about, nothing to propagate. But I got to the point this time to give you the mood scenario, which is good. I feel like the little sensation of achievement has happened here in this conversation.
Right.
I mean, I got to communicate what I would say when you put me on the spot and say, well, Bob, what are we doing for? What's the point? And we already agreed there was no point, but we're still talking. So I said, okay, there's a range of moods. But I would say that there is a reality to a higher level of consciousness in this process of moods. You can be cool about it, but you wouldn't say it's better or you got to get there. But I enjoy being at a higher level. You know what I mean? It's a temporary illusion. It's a mood. And so I enjoy the mood of being enlightened for a while.
Well, sometimes I feel lucid, clear, present, and without, and not feeling really disturbed by stuff, and kind of looking forward to whatever my present activities are that I'm involved in. And other times I feel like I'm barely, like I don't know how I'm going to survive the next 2 weeks, and it's it's miserable. I don't want to feel that way.
Yeah, it's because you see, we are all those are parts of us.
Yeah.
You know, all part of this collective dream that we're living in, that has been going on for millions of years. It's everything is there. Every form of human experience is vibrating there in that dream, and that's all part of us. Now, the only way, you know, you can shut that off is just not to dream anymore. But there's no way, there's no how to stop the dream. But if by chance, if by some luck, as Yuji points it, you're thrown out of it, it doesn't exist anymore for you, you're not connected to it anymore, you don't give it any juice anymore, it doesn't respond anymore, it's just there, and there's freedom from that because you're not identified with it anymore. So then that brings us to the problem of what is this identification process taking place all the time that makes me feel this is my experience.
Right, you said though it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
When you're in that mood, that it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're not in that mood, then you don't, like Scott just said, I feel great, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so, Scott, when, you know, I always think that what you eat and your environment does affect your mood. So if I do get depressed, it doesn't last very long because I don't wallow in bad food that would keep it going. So maybe your depression, I don't get depressed for 2 weeks. I mean, that's ridiculous. But if that's actually what happens to you, Scott, you might want to look at some stuff you're eating or you know, imbibing. Because I do find, and it might be just, I couldn't make any claims for it, but within my knowledge of myself, if I eat in a strange way of just eating supplements, I feel incredibly good and hardly feel any depression or anything. You know, I'm like stoned, like a mild stone effect. So I prefer that.
Well, I said 2 weeks to emphasize a point. I mean, every day is different. I don't know. You know, it's much, my changes in the way that I feel happen much more rapidly than that. So,
okay, here's an interesting point.
Well, I feel this, that there isn't any state to be in permanently. There
right.
isn't any fixed state. And so each moment is a shifting process of not landing on any spot. Not landing on any realization, any recognition, any point of reference. And we don't want to live that way because that means that I don't exist anymore.
Right. And I don't know how bizarre our conversation would seem to different people, it probably would sound bizarre to the creeping meatball. The average whatever, but there's a lot more people who wouldn't find it bizarre, and I'm on different chat groups, and the communication is very ridiculous, and yet people are pretending they're enjoying it. And I wanted to mention this. We had a friend here, staying here this past week, Dave Neufeld. He's a very good music composer, and he would go online and read some stuff, and he'd read some bad news. And then he would get sort of, I don't know if he got depressed, but he would say, you know, I hate humans. He says, I hope that asteroid comes and wipes us out. So he said that at one point. And then later, he was looking at these pictures of this amazing dog that stands up. I don't know if you know about it. And it walks around, and people, it walks around like a human. And there was pictures of the owner and all this. And everybody was like, and he was all delighted in how the dog had this effect. And so I said to him, so in the mood you're in now, do you want the asteroid to wipe us out? He goes, no, I think I'll hold off on the asteroid. So it got to the point later in the week that we go, we'd like do the Caesarian, Caesar's thumbs up or thumbs down. I go, what do you think? How do you feel today? How was the water? You go to the beach. Well, how's the barometer for the asteroid? He sort of wiggled his hand. Well, no, yes, I want the asteroid to come. So this oscillation is what we're talking about, mood. It became a joke trying to determine what conclusion we come up with, right? Yeah. Ultimately, do you want the asteroid to wipe us out? And you really couldn't pin it down. He wouldn't pin it down, really, if you stayed with it for a week. He oscillated. And that's what we're all doing, right?
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is that this makes me sort of feel or think. First, I want to say that we don't have to worry about the asteroid because human beings are going to wipe themselves out, you know.
That's potentially, that may not be. Oh, I know, I could really, got him really depressed. No.
Yeah, that's a real possibility that human beings will kill themselves off.
It's a possibility, but we don't know if it's going to happen, so I'm not going to think about it. And if it did happen, that's okay. Okay, it happened.
Kissed your butt goodbye.
So. Yeah, I like Dave Worster. He claims that he lives in his hypothalamus or someplace way below the cortex. He's not really here most of the time, and he's in that's a state nice. Of something. He's like not here. I sometimes feel that's the way I am. I'm not here. I'm not registering anything, though I'm conscious. Here's what happened. What got Dave depressed is he read the local Maui weekly newspaper, and it was talking to a mother who had a teenage son who was hanging out with these kids, and she said, these kids are not the same as we were. They took her son, beat him up, and threw him over a cliff, and he died.
Yeah.
Which is the kind of stuff you're saying happens in India.
Well, yeah, just last week, some college kids kidnapped one of their friends, took him out, killed him, and because they didn't get the ransom, you know. And
yeah.
So they freaked out and killed him. And it happened 6 months ago, a similar case. And some girl just killed her boyfriend, had her other boyfriend kill her other boyfriend because he wasn't getting her a job in the movies because he had connections. He was a producer. And they cut his body up, put it in a suitcase, and thought they could dispose of it in the local mangrove, but they got caught, and you know. But every day, something's going on. But you said something back a little few minutes ago that kind of rang a bell with me, when my bell rang, anyway, that... Mm. That about moods. Yeah, if I'm happy, if I'm distracted by pleasure, by food, by sex, by some enjoyment, or just I'm just cool, I'm just nothing, I'm just chemically, my brain is in some Dave Worster state, we'll call it. I don't think of these things, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Or if I see a beautiful person, beautiful girl, beautiful boy, whatever the case may be, I'm occupied with that and I feel happy. Or I see a movie or I have a good meal and I enjoy it. So it seems that what's happening with us philosophically is that we're always on the run to avoid being with our self, which is at the moment. People talk about the now, you know, it's about the now. What is the now, anyway? It's just being present. And we don't want to be present because nothing's happening.
Hey, Robert. What if, you know, they talk, a lot of people who are spiritual seekers allude to this notion that essentially we all spring from the same source, therefore we're all one. And I think to myself, what if I discovered that was true, that there is only one, and that I am that one, and then I discovered that that was extremely lonely, and I fragmented myself into 1,000,000,000 human beings and other kinds of creatures in order to distract myself from the fact that I was alone, and that was not fun. Now, you were just referring to the idea of being present and being with your experience, but what if your fundamental experience is one of feeling bored, and lonely.
Yeah, you're just a sick of the bi comic.
What'd you say? Oh, so she's getting called. Okay.
Be right now because.
Okay, hold. Yes. Okay, we stopped it.
No, we're rolling. Okay. I'm
very happy right now because the courier just brought me a package that contains a brand new espresso machine from Italy. that makes me feel very happy now. This idea that we're all one. I think that the fact is, look, we're not separate from anything. There is just life. Huh? There's just, whatever you want to call it, the cosmos, animals, whatever, bacteria, viruses, everything. We're not, the only thing that separates me is my thinking I'm separate. Otherwise, I'm not separate from the life. There is just oneness. Okay, it's very simple. But the idea that finding a reason why we're one is kind of bogus, I feel. But the thing is, the only thing that separates me from the rest of the world around me, the nature around me, is my image I have of what I think I'm looking at. Saying a tree, a dog, a bird, a person, this, a that, an enemy, a friend, blue, green. It's the image I have. It's the culture, the framework. That framework separates me from being this state of being connected with everything. It separates me because it creates an image. And do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. How long do you think human beings have been doing this separation thing?
When they invented language. And before language, it was, sounds and sign language. They had to have language to survive, to create civilization, to do this and to do that.
Well, animals didn't.
Yeah, animals have a language.
But they didn't need to create language to survive.
No, but human beings, created civilization with language. Gave them the tools to do what they've done. When I was in Cambodia last month, I visited Angkor Wat, which is this fantastic, they built the 12th centuries, a huge city that housed a million people. And, the architecture, the beauty, the aesthetics, it was fantastic, And just looking at it, you're awed by the potential that human beings have to create, to make things. Unfortunately, there's another side to us, and that is we have learned to make bombs, airplanes, everything that we create. We find a way to use it as a destructive tool to get what we want.
What do you think is the source of feeling alone and bored? Or lonely? Loneliness and boredom. What do you think the source of that is?
Comparison. Wanting two things at the same time. It's wanting to be something other than what I am. Okay, I'm bored. Nothing's happening. I want to be non-bored. I want to be active. No, comparison. Thinking. We don't need to think. Yuji keeps telling us all. It wasn't necessary to think, he said. We can get along without thinking, he said.
Yeah, but you're philosophizing, you see, because I don't know if you can really stop thinking.
You can't. You can't stop thinking. It just goes on. The trick is, call it a trick.
Yeah, that's a trick. You're getting tricky.
Yeah, I don't like to use that word.
Yeah,
but some people somehow find themselves on the other side of the river. They don't even know how they got there. Luck. I don't know. What happened to Yuji? Something blew the circuits out. There was an atomic explosion took place. No. He says it's genetic.
Well, if it is, then it should be happening to more people.
Why?
Because that strain, that genetic strain leading up to him should be expressing itself in others.
Yeah.
Yuji seems pretty unique.
Yeah, he seems very unique. And it's frightening to think about that he is unique, or it's also egotistical just to say that it only happens to one. I heard Krishnamurti, J. Krishnamurti, say that in Sanen, Switzerland, 1966. He said, "Oh, this only happens to a few." You know? I thought, why? Same question you're asking, Scott. Why does this only happen to a few? Hey, that leaves me out. I want to be in that state. I want to be an enlightened person. Why? Why does it only happen to a few? Because we enjoy our misery.
Yeah, but we want to stay around to enjoy our misery, and we read the newspapers and see these unpredictable anarchy murders. It intimidates people and say, geez, I might get wiped out in 10 minutes, you know, by some ridiculous accident or passion that comes flying through my room. It seems that it's, even though it's a misery or a boredom or semi-cool feeling, the real problem is how to stop and how much you're afraid of stopping it.
We can't stop.
Right. But I mean, we're afraid of being stopped.
Right.
In other words, being killed. Or in pain. That seems to be what all the thought is about, avoiding pain. And that's good. You jockey yourself. You don't cause too many problems. But usually life sneaks problems up on you. You know, there's something that may not, I don't know if there's something, but life, you can't avoid problems. Something always gets you, no matter what you're doing. So if you anticipate that, you could say, yeah, I'm not afraid of stopping, and I don't, but I'm going to enjoy the part of myself that wants to keep being comfortable and living. That's the doubleness, or that's the irony there, because you basically don't want to die. And probably when we die, we get into a better state, and we say, well, what was I worried about? This is even better where I am now. Now, some people say, no, you don't go anywhere. Well, you wouldn't even know. You don't know it. If you don't go anywhere after your death, you don't know you've died. Okay? So
You have no way of witnessing your death.
Right. And so either way, you're in a better state. You either aren't existing, or you went into another world that survived this world, and that's probably a better feeling. Or you might go through a few transitions for a couple minutes, adjustment, but you're in a better situation. So there's really, that's the joke. You really have to get people to overcome the illusion of the fear of death. But that's the hardest thing to do, and I wouldn't even want to try to make someone overcome it.
Well,
but I'm just expressing the tradition.
Yeah.
I'm expressing the tradition.
We just don't want to come to an end. What am I? What am I? I'm my house, my wife, my children, my husband, my friend, my car, my knowledge that I have, my spirituality, my this, my that. Everything I identify with is me. And the me does not want to come to an end. It wants to continue.
That's what it feels when it's...
And on and on.
Yeah, but that's what it feels here. When it dies, and if there's life after death, it realizes... What?
If it dies, if the me is finished, there isn't any me.
Right. And you wouldn't even know that you died, I guess. Well, there's a mental death, and there's your body's still around, but you're a different person because you don't have a me. But I'm saying if you,
I don't know, Bob. I don't know about that. That's speculation.
Well, that's right. You're being tricky. You started saying some things with certitude. Now you flip back into I don't know. Okay, I can oscillate from knowing and not knowing. That's what we're doing here. Yeah. I let all you right. go on a no for a while and lay out an idea. And then I counter with an idea. And then you say, well, I don't know, Bob. That's speculation. Well, I've been listening to you speculate for 5 minutes before that. So we are the same person talking to itself. And probably it has to feel loneliness every now and then. You just have to remember you're not going to feel lonely all the time.
Yeah.
It's how much. What is passion?
When I'm
I got a good question. What's passionate living? What is passionate living? How would I judge someone else whether they're being living passionately and whether they are getting duped into the experience they're having and are going to be shocked when it's taken away? It's the whole thing. People say, "Got to be cool. Got to stay cool." Well, that means like I'll live, but I know there's no life before death, and there may be nothing after. So I'm staying cool. So you know. You watch people interact in social environments. There's always someone who gets overexcited. And everybody else says, wait a minute, this is not cool. We're supposed to just keep this bland level. You know?
Yeah. I have this image of myself of what I think I should be, how I should act, what I should do, how to.
Are they joining in?
The lady is asking, the lady, my cook here, she's asking me if I'm talking to Paul. I'm fascinated by the computer here.
So. Is she a local Indian? She's not familiar with this technology?
No, bye. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
You're in Hawaii.
Good afternoon.
You are in Hawaii.
Far away. We're in holy India.
And we're in
holy India.
We're inside you.
She says no English, but she has a little English.
Okay, what did she say to us?
Hello.
Hello, okay. Well, we say hello back.
Okay, yes.
So we were interrupted. You were right on a good point. We were talking about the acting cool and passion. Yeah. And how much passion can you judge someone experiencing?
Just a moment. What? After? Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's Bara now. It's afternoon. After 12. Hello?
Yeah. What do you mean she wants to know about it?
Yeah, she wanted to know. She wanted to know if she was saying right. Good afternoon.
Oh, I see. Yes. No, she's saying right. Here, I'll tell you, Bob. I have a friend who's read God Men, Con Men. So we have a phrase that evokes cool humor. Whenever the time comes up to use it, you never know when you're going to use it. We say, "I will not shed one tear for you when you pass on."
Yeah.
We quote Yuji, and we were talking about when I go to my friend's funeral, I will say I will shed no tears for Billy, I will not shed one tear, and we
one
joke
drop.
About that. Yeah. Right. So we will say that Yuji has added to our lexicon of personal jokes we have between each other.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a lot of Yuji phrases floating around in the world today.
Yes.
A lot of them. I don't know how they get there, but they do. So.
But you were going to say something. That's good. So you were going to say something else. I'll let you go for. I'll let you speculate for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just jump in real quick and say that hearing that woman's voice reminds me of how different the feminine exploration of experience and questioning of the world is from what we're doing. We're the three guys getting together to try to work this out through linear thought processes.
We're speculating. Yeah, we're speculating.
Yeah, and you know, the women that I know will say, well, here, let me just read Rumi for you, and maybe that'll clear things up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another diversion. So
it's not a problem. It's not even a problem.
True.
And if you know that it's not a problem, when you experience problems, you can be cool about it, and you could even allow yourself to get totally mad and screwed up about it. But you'd always have a level of detachment that you know you would surface again.
Yeah.
That was poetic.
So, yep.
So what did you learn?
What I find is interesting now is when I meet somebody who new, is to try to bring out of them how they're feeling, and if there's any problem with not functioning in a better way, in a more clear way, in a more easier way. And I try to push that at them so they can look and find out perhaps that they can live a little differently and be more free and thus have more energy. That seems to be what I kind of enjoy doing with people now.
Now, Robert, one thing that Bob Dobbs has made me aware of is the fact that I can talk with you, and in the course of having a discourse, I can come round to the experience that you're attempting to impart to me. Mm-hmm. But it'll last exactly about, well, it'll last maybe 12 to 24 hours if I'm lucky. But within 48 hours, I've participated in so many different forms of media. My context and perception and moods have been mutated by television, computers, and radios that have put me into so many different headspaces that you become irrelevant within about 48 hours.
Yes, it's true. And have diversions. We want to be entertained, basically, from being bored.
Well, it's not even necessarily. You know, I still categorize entertainment. You know, I don't. Everything that I am exposed to in the media, I don't consider to be entertainment. I consider to be entertainment something that I go out of my way, you know, to go to a movie or go out of my way to set time aside to experience something. But nevertheless, I'm bombarded by media 24/7, and I don't consider it entertainment. Nevertheless, it's my environment. I can't get away from it.
Well, I guess, you know, yeah, we have definitions of work and interest and occupation and so forth, but if we're not doing anything, you know, just sitting in one space, we get pretty bored with it, and we want to have a diversion or something to happen. I want to be alive. I want to feel. I want some experience. I want to, I want to be entertained.
Right, and Robert, a guru comes along and says, you shouldn't be bored. Here, I can give you a way of getting over that. Or someone comes along and gives them a TV. That's the choice today. Either go into meditation, and that's no better, or go into TV.
There's no difference between the gurus offering meditation and a television set.
Yeah. I beg to differ.
No, we got the.
You read the autobiography of the yogi, and you realize
we,
these guys.
No, we hit a nerve.
You realize some of these yogis that Yogananda knew were sunk in a bliss of that was objective and that was timeless.
And it was brain chemistry, aberrated brain chemistry.
Yeah, right. But it gave them the
nothing
sense.
To it.
It gave them the
nothing
sense.
Nothing to it.
There's something.
Take a pill.
Scott, let's gang up with Scott. Nothing to it, Scott. It was aberrated brain chemistry.
Take some ecstasy, Scott.
No,
take
yeah.
some LSD.
That's
okay.
That's fine.
I
but
take
nevertheless,
all
the world of the world of relativity, and then the eternal primal. Consciousness underlying the world of relativity is stable and is and there's a blissfulness and an objective reality to it that the world of that the relative world of experience cannot touch.
Scott's turning Period. Into a fascist.
Oh, Scott, there's nothing to the bliss. Nothing to the bliss.
Say it this way, Robert. No. Huh? It's not. There is something, but it's a passing mood. We now
That's
have
all.
So much. Yeah, we now
That's
have so much.
That,
yeah, I can
it's
be enlightened.
It's just an experience.
We got a lot more experience happening today. This is the greatest yeah. time to be alive because you got a lot of ways to enjoy the dream and be distracted. Yeah. And if you realize that's cool, you can even enjoy an enlightened state for a week or two or 2 minutes or something. But I know it'll pass, and I don't worry that I lost my enlightenment. It shouldn't be a problem that you can't remember Robert 48 hours later.
I'm hurt.
Now it's your turn. We struck a nerve.
I tell you, Scott, I don't take any interest in what anybody else has ever said about anything.
And this society today allows you to be that way. If you didn't have as yeah. many distractions, you would go to a monk and hang out with him because it would be the best you could get in the boring, slow pace of life 100, 500 years ago.
Yeah,
we can be, you're a modern person. You can say that because all these distractions really eliminate any authority for any that would be around and you would experience for 5 years. That is impossible today.
Yeah.
Now, people who go around with an image in their mind, now we can bring in the wisdom of that idea. If you go around with an image and you think you need to have that image of the Catholic priest you had when you were a kid and you like the feeling and then you can't find the relevance of the Catholic priest but you're trying to find a new priest, that could be a problem. It interrupts your ability to flow with the present. And
right.
And then that comes into what you say, Robert. I play games with people like you do. If I meet someone, I try to say something absurd, not too obviously absurd, but I get someone, I meet the mailman, I will not hesitate within 10 seconds if he's there presenting me a parcel and there's a time to do it, I'll bring up a philosophical question to him. And
yeah.
just like he won't get that in most houses. And I'll do that. That's the same as what you're saying. You will find a way to tweak someone if you're with them for 15 minutes just to make it different for them.
Yeah. In example, I put an ad in the Craigslist, local Craigslist, for an editor, a video editor.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of calls, and one guy came over, and I liked him right off. I had a good feeling, and so I said, I told him what the project was about, and we watched a video of Yuji, and I gave him a book about Yuji, about his life. And I gave him some CDs to look at. And then I said, dear, go home and look at these and then tell me what you think tomorrow. So he came back and he said, wow. You know, he said, who is this guy? You know, and then a few days later, he said, you know, when I go to sleep at night, I can hear his voice. And then yesterday he said, I had a dream about him. I said, I'm sorry to hear that. I said, because the virus has entered you.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what we do. We were hypodermic syringes giving the virus. The
virus. Yeah, everywhere. Yeah. Every Wednesday, I get a chance to be a virus. I can be a guru on that cash flow show. And so James offers great advice on how to get out of debt. But he says more and more, since I've been part of his show for over a year now, more and more people will call him up, and they'll ask questions about debt and all that, and he'll go through the routine, tell them. But then he realizes, based on what they say next, that they have another agenda. They say, so James, who is this Bob Never guy? Is he for real? That becomes something bothering them or interesting them. I'm creating a little UG thing on Wednesdays. Yeah. On Thursdays, well, I don't do that.
Everybody's interested in the new kid on the block.
A new experience, yeah.
New kid on the block, new experience.
That's new baby. Because women love new babies. They look at women like new babies.
Yeah, of course. Because we're second-hand people.
That's right.
Everything that we are thinking about, talking about, entertaining ourselves with is second-hand. It's old. Yeah? Has no life, no vitality. So we're interested in finding that vitality, that pulse of life.
Another form of escape. We want the big show. We want a big distraction. The big distraction.
Bring it all on, baby.
Give me that ayahuasca.
Yeah, right. Give me the trip.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'm ready. Both circuits.
And some people express that by murdering their kids and wiping out their husband, then shooting themselves. That's an expression of looking for the big trip.
Jesus. That's it. Yeah, that happens.
I just read about Frank. You know Frank Lloyd Wright, the famous architect at Guggenheim Museum and all that?
Yeah.
Someone just sent Carolyn an email, and I'm on her computer, and I was looking at it I was distracting myself while you guys were speculating absurdly. And
thanks.
Another snipe at attention. Another hurt. I hurt Robert again. But she says that Frank Lloyd Wright had four kids and a wife. He left the wife, got involved with the mistress, went and lived with the mistress and her two kids. One day, he leaves, and a disgruntled employee of his finds out about his mistress, goes over and kills his mistress' two kids and the other kids and herself.
Jesus!
Now that you don't associate that brutality with Frank Lloyd Wright's, right? So the worst person who's writing this story to Carolyn is a New Yorker, and she says, she screams in the email, it was what took my breath away, this hidden thing about Frank Lloyd Wright's life, and she says, I'll never look at the Guggenheim again the same way. But
why should he be any different? Why should Frank Lloyd Wright be any different than anybody else?
Because people put pedestals. Because you have a distraction, it's like a good fuck, you put the person on a pedestal for a while.
Right. Right.
Okay? So he created neat architecture.
We equate talent with as being moral.
Oh, not even that. What's a belief system? It's a thought that you're thinking for a long time. Okay? So if you're impressed with somebody, Beethoven or something, and you like piano music and he just gets you off.
That he was this or that, yeah. He was
a pedophile. But at first you don't even know about it. You just like the music. And then you get hypnotized. He's a Rai. He hypnotizes you. The natural expression of gratitude is to give the person a little more, quote, respect or something, or a specialness. Yeah. You tolerate their little stuff. And then you might get shocked out of that, or after a while you might get bored. The person, because you'll find Frank Zappa and you like that music better.
Yeah,
so we're constantly putting, and it's a love. This is where we're all one. Our love is expressed that when we get a neat experience from somebody, we kind of appreciate the person and we're willing to tolerate them, accept them, and just put them on a pedestal. Today, we have so many experiences that people get knocked off their pedestals pretty quickly because there's other people.
Because the media is so fast.
Yeah.
Communication is so fast. Yeah, no one has a chance anymore.
That's right. There's no staying power. And McLuhan said that's what was great about TV. It distracted people so much that the military-industrial complex, which might have had wanted to have a nuclear war in the 60s, they couldn't pull it off because people were too distracted. So TV saved us from the plan to have a big war by the Fourth Reich Nazis. You know what I mean? And it disappeared. It's long gone now. Now we got other problems. So this is what I think it means when awareness says Ra'i, the original separateness, is returned to essence. It got forgotten about. Whatever that plan was, the grand design to have the biblical Armageddon, it got waylaid. It became just a subset on the History Channel. Uh-oh, you guys didn't hear that?
Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, so you got that on tape?
Yes, I did, and it looks like Robert's been knocked off.
Well, that was good. If he doesn't come back, I got the last word, but the point is, I'm glad you got on tape. That was a good rant by me at the very end.
Yeah. Let me pause for a second and bring him in, at least so okay. We can say goodbye if that's where we're at. Hold on a sec.
So if we have lost Bob and we can't get him back, I liked what I just said. And I say that was one of our best conversations. We actually moved past the dithering and moved faster, I thought.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Fun for me, too. So, yeah, he's been knocked off and can't seem to get him back. It might be an internet connection problem.
It seems to happen with him. He can get in about an hour, and then India knocks it out.
Yeah, that's right. So signing off for what is today? What is the date today?
It's March 1st for us and March 2nd for Bob, for Robert Carr.
All righty. Signing off then for
2009.
Yeah, okay.